Testing.
There's so much who can ignore the temptations of shopping this weekend. Welcome to the Historical Museum, folks. My name is Patty Bartlett, and this is one of a series of Sunday programs. I think you'll especially enjoy today's program because it combines two media, my favorite of live people, and the second, our favorite of television, into a program I think you'll find very interesting. First of all, we'll show a 30-minute film by the Florida Folklife Center made about fishermen who go out of the Fernandina area. And they talk about fishing for a living and why they chose that crazy lifestyle. And then to put the icing on the cake, we actually have some live, breathing fishermen with us today who will tell us why they choose to fish for a living and what it's like. The whole program will take about an hour. In the back, of course, you will probably notice the coffee and brownies. We are selling things for the United Way. If you like coffee and brownies, please help yourself. I will turn on the movie, then go in the office and turn out the lights. And if we need to move the sound, move it forward or adjust the sound, we can do that easily.
Catch. The bycatch being the small fish and the crabs and so forth that you consider trash and you rake back overboard. Well, none of it goes to waste because just as fast as it's going overboard, there's usually pretty much enough porpoises and stuff like that to handle a good amount of it. Plus, everything that settles to the bottom, the crabs and the bigger fish feed off of that. And we don't catch any fish that you would consider a sport type fish. I mean, we don't catch any trout. We don't catch any grouper. And fish like this, you know, we never catch any of them. That's the type of fish we catch, the small fin type fish. Canfish and grunts and just that. That's all we catch. Hardly ever catch a fish other than a flounder that you consider an edible fish. And they show too, a lot of people are under the impression that the whole shrimping net, doors, and all that drags right on the bottom. But as they showed there, just the door, the actual door, the trawl board is all that's touching the bottom. And the net is, you know, 4 to 6 inches off. And usually there's a chain just ahead of that net, and that acts as a stimulant. We call it a tickler chain. It tickles the shrimp because he has to hop to get out of the way of that chain, and the combination of the chain and the net coming right along behind him, you know, he goes in the net. But for every one you catch, there's hundreds that get away. There's just no way, because I've been in places where there was 25, 30 boats, single file, dragging, and the first boat will catch just as many shrimp as the last boat. You just turn around and go back the other way, you know. And the whole time you're working shrimp anyhow, they're leaving. You're not catching them because they're there to stay. You're catching them just because they're passing through. And that's it. all your shrimp derive from your fresh water, your rivers and your lakes that are open to rivers and streams, you know, like Peace River, Myakka River. All the shrimp for this area, a good part of the shrimp for this area derive from rivers like Peace River and Myakka, you know. And every time they dump millions of gallons of what they call treated sewer water and this sort of thing in there, it's got to have an effect, not only on the shrimp, but it's got to have an effect on the whole place, you know. It's just like you can consider the rainwater, like the one fella said, has an effect on them when they decide to leave, you know. And they leave according to how brackish the water is. And if the water's been brackish all year because there's been millions of gallons of sewer water dumped in there, you can't look forward to a good season because a few have left all along, you know. So and each shrimp is responsible, as that shrimp comes in and lays its 250,000 eggs, one shrimp will lay 250,000 eggs, you know, and then that shrimp migrates out, and the next year when they're big enough, the eggs that shrimp laid have hatched out, and that shrimp will lay more, and that one will leave. You know, very few will come back in. Very few. It's not a It's not a circle migration. It's, you know, they do their thing and they're leaving. And they nobody knows where their final destination is, because they catch so many of a varying kind and amount up and down, you know, the whole U.S. So that's basically what I could tell you, unless you got any specific questions.
What was he talking about, the price of the shrimp being so low? How is that a...
Price always varies with... They we'll get a bad price here if they're having a real good season somewhere else. Because they can actually, from here, they can actually have them brought down here cheaper than they could buy them off the boats here. Mm-hmm. You know, so the shrimp gets shipped, especially from Louisiana to here. You know, they just about stay in this realm up and down the east and west coast. So, you know, if they're having a real good season in Texas, then the price will fall real low in Louisiana, because the guys can pick up the phone, you know, and just call over there and get 200-300 boxes, you know, for next to nothing what he was paying off the boat. They do that down in Key West a lot.
Imports
is is steadily going up. Imports are steadily going. Yeah, and that's one thing too, because there's no set organization on the price, no control other than what the dealer wants to pay. You know, that it's not hard for somebody that's pushing imports to just move right in when there's a low in the market. You know, and they can fill it with something else, because you're talking dollars, you know. And that's happened a lot. That's really hurt the industry overall, is the imports, because you can't keep a price up if they import so many that they can sell all they want, you know, and the middleman's making money, and the guy that's importing is making money, and the shrimper's holding the bag, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, plus your overhead escalates every year. Just like in any other fishing industry, it just escalates. Every year there's something new. There's something they want you to do. There's, you know, and now they're starting to talk about regulating the industry, you know. And they've done a whole year's research, and they're going to regulate it now. You know, they did a whole year. You know, that's impressive that they can do that in a whole year and have enough knowledge to make all the rules and regulations now.
That's a good one for you. I got a question for Corbett. Corbett, we saw how these people catch shrimp with big old nets. How different is it for the fin fishermen?
We use gill nets.
And you catch the same little
no,
fish?
No, we don't catch those fish like you catch the dogs. Fish we target, we can catch. And we can catch the size fish we want by the regulation of the size of the mash that we use. You know, we're coming now into our roast season. We graduate up to a bigger mash, and then after the roast season's over, then we go drop back down to a small mash, real small mash, and you know, because the fish are small, and then they just increase in the year, and we just keep graduating, so we can regulate the fish that we catch by the size of the mash that we use. In fact, gill netting is probably the most selective type fishery that there is, because we can catch just what we want, the size that we want.
And when you go out, you leave, what, about 6 o'clock in the morning?
It varies. It depends. If you're a daytime fisherman like I am, if the tides are right, I'll leave around the crack of day, a little before day, around the crack of day. Sometimes you wait, if your tides are making in the evening, you wait till evening to go. So it varies from one week to the next, because of your difference in your tides, your spring tides or your net tides.
I'll tell you a story out of Corbett. You know, about the superstitions they were talking about. Well, Corbett used to fish night or day, and then he found out if you fish at night, you get ugly. So he fishes daytime only now.
Yes, sir.
I wrote about
it years before I learned that.
Tarpon Springs. About a fishing group at Tarpon Springs, where they have a Greek festival every year, that they used to one time sail across to Port Aransas on the Texas coast. And I wondered if they did that directly across the Gulf, or if they did it via some Louisiana or Mississippi port, because that's a long way directly across.
I have no idea. Once you leave Tarpon Springs, you can't get back inland until you get to Carabel. You know, and then you can take a different route. you know.
But they went all the way across to Rockport, Texas, and Port Aransas.
Well, they probably went straight.
Yeah, went straight.
It would have took a long time to go the other route.
Years ago, I didn't see it. I read about something in the Geographic that said that they had contacts with the fishermen that have been at Rockport in Port Aransas. And they claim that they have contacts with the Tarpon Springs fishermen, Fisher Industries there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that used to be, that was back in the days when they were sponging, probably.
And I don't know if they
that
still
used to be the, yeah, there used to be a big sponging industry out of Tarpon. Yeah. Where all the Greeks, they came, they, when they first came here, everything, that's what they did.
Aren't there a lot of Portuguese, too, in that?
Oh, man.
Some parts of Florida.
Sponging is starting to come back in. I heard it was.
The modern amount is what, they say they it's really not feasible to be harvesting, you know, because of the man hours it takes to get as many plus man-made sponges have taken their place now. Yeah. You know, they've innovated. Man has ruled itself out of that.
See, possibly referring to the movement of fleets between Florida and Texas.
Probably
the
could
seasonal
be.
Movements.
Yeah.
Is that, yes. Does go on.
But not directly. They don't go
they're
directly.
They're targeting different species of shrimp. Mm-hmm.
Oh, they still, a lot of the shrimp boats move around.
Oh, Fort Myers Beach.
Yeah,
Texas,
you got boats.
They go all back and forth all the time.
Texas.
Yeah, along June and July, you can't hardly find a boat left around here. They've all went to Texas.
Yeah.
You know,
they'll sail directly Texas. Across.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, that goes straight across.
A lot of the fish houses here, the packing houses down at the beach, actually have operations in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got side doors up in Texas and around there, you know. So they, a lot of the, some of the companies own their own fleet of boats. So they just more or less say, all right, four boats are going to Texas, you know, five of you are going to Louisiana. You know, they just spread them out. And then they keep in communication with each other, you know. That's modern technology, you know. One can tell the other, you know. Where to go to, where to find the shrimp, if he's in them, you know, and they're all working for the same company, why? But there are literally thousands and thousands of boats in Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas. There's so many shrimp boats there that it's unreal. It's just amazing. I mean, on an opening day out there, see, they've got a good system of regulating the industry. Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, you know, they've studied, they've worked on it for years, they know what works, you know, they have open seasons, closed seasons, net size laws, you know, and when you come in there from out of state, you better have the right equipment on your boat and the right permits, because they're not looking at their guys, they're looking at you, you know, and they're real strict about it, which is something they aren't in the state of Florida. They're not, they have a few rules on the books, but they're not enforcing them, they're not strict, they don't have the manpower, and I guess the manpower stems from not having the money, you know, but it's hard to believe, but that's the way it is. Do you have a question?
Yeah, what's the law nowadays with that excluder panel, you know, to keep the turtles out?
The law is it's supposed to go, it goes into different areas as of January 1st, and there's supposedly by October it's going to cover the whole to have a what they call a turtle excluding device in a shrimp trawl, and if the boat's over 25 feet in length. And as a shrimper, I'm opposed to it, as is every shrimper I know, you know, because they haven't done enough research and development on such a device, and what of the shrimpers that have tried them, you know, have noticed a sizable amount of difference in the catch. Your nets just don't perform. A shrimp net is such a delicate thing to get it where it's all exactly right, you know.
How does the device work on the net?
It's, well, they've got three different ones, but basically it's a round hoop with a door in the top, and when a turtle gets in it, supposedly he's supposed to be going up, you know, and he trips the door and it releases him. But I've been shrimping for 16 years and I've never caught a dead turtle. Never have I caught a dead turtle. Never. I have caught turtles. You know, I've caught two and three at a time. You know, on a rare occasion, I've caught two or three. You know, but I can recall a whole season and not catching but one. but
Well, sure.
I mean, Eric, that's right.
But if what can happen, you
yeah,
can't keep them out of that mess.
Right, but
they're again, it depends on the time you track.
Several years ago, they wouldn't even let us. If you caught one, you weren't even allowed to leave him on the deck.
Yeah,
you know.
I know that.
And so you throw him back overboard, he'd die probably. You know, but at least now I've had to keep him on the deck for an hour or so before they'd revive. But at least he'd revive, you know. And I just think they're wrong. I think maybe in a certain area or something they should restrict it, you know, make you use them. But just to say they're for everybody all over, you know, that's not right.
They make a net a lot more expensive too, don't they?
Oh yeah, you're talking $200 to $400 per net, and a net. Like they were using there, that net there was $700 or $800. You know, that mongoose type net or whatever it is. I'm not big enough, the boat's not big enough to even hold a net like that. You know, that's a big net, and a lot of the boats out here pull four nets.
Not only that, they find it to be dangerous in some cases.
Well, you get out there in rough, and you've got one of those heavy turtle excluders, and, you know, and it comes pitching and rolling like that. You've got all you can do to control that bag when it's got a couple hundred pounds of stuff in it, you know. And if it pitches and rolls and gets away from you and knocks you overboard, hey, you had it. You know, you're gone. And they expect us to do something like that when you go down to Mexico where they're processing them, canning them, and shipping them out. Go down there and buy everything from the eggs to the head. You know, by the hundreds. Every day they go out and harvest them. In the islands, all down the islands, you know. And then they say, well, you guys are the ones killing all the turtles.
We pay fines.
Well, if there was 12,000 turtles a year killed, the beach would be littered with them all the time, you know, by the shrimper. I don't know where they could, they got that figure come out of thin air.
Well, they make figures. I think they make figures.
Well, I think they make them up, too.
Well, what area do you fish?
I'm usually just off Boca Grande right now. I have worked Louisiana and Mississippi, but right now, for the last few years, I've just been in Charlotte Harbor and off Boca Grande.
You have to use one of the rolling nets?
No, we just use a regular, standard flat net. See, there's all kinds of variations of shrimp nets, too, depending on what area you want to work in and stuff, what works best.
Now, the shrimp catches lower each year?
No, it goes, it cycles. This year has been poor all summer. Last summer was good, and the summer before that was better, you know. But I look forward to get good again. I hope I do, anyhow. You got to be optimistic about it. If you're the other opposite about it, when you have three bad years in a row, you might as well hang it up.
And people on your boat too.
That's right.
It seems to be picking up offshore now, so maybe it'll.
Yeah, it's a little bit, but it's not what it should be for right now. This time of the year, it should be better out there.
What's a turtle crawl, and where it's the best one in Florida?
I don't know where the best one is.
It's the one on the east coast around Fort Lauderdale.
All up and down the east coast.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a famous one over there. My mother had a picture taken over there once.
I think what's determining that now is the lights.
Yeah, lights on the shore.
We don't have that many shaded areas anymore on either the west or east coast of Florida, whether it's a beach, that is suitable for them to lay their eggs, you know, to the incubation period. Sanibel is one of the places that still quite a lot of turtles on the shore in Sanibel. Used to be Costa, used to be Las Vegas. But those beaches are becoming so light that they just won't come ashore unless it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
I think that makes a difference. And so that's really governs what you call key places. Because the whole West Coast of Florida, you know, used to you could go from Eglin Key Light to Sanibel Light, you know, running that shore at night, and you wouldn't see a dozen lights along the beach, you know, and now it's a city.
Same way down in the Florida Keys.
Yeah,
you used to just go a mile or so, and then you'd start seeing a turtle here and there. Now you've got to go out further and further and further to come across whether you see two or three, because, I mean, the place is so developed now, they're not up there near the shore at all.
I was telling you about the Port Canaveral before. Thousands and thousands of turtles that show up at Port Canaveral never come out the water and lay in the eggs.
That's
from lights from the condominiums.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's affecting all fishers. It's not just the turtles.
Your fish stay further offshore.
Has a definite effect on the market fishing.
just like your landmarks, can almost change weekly.
Yeah,
that's right. And it's like turtles. They say that there's not many turtles. And I have some trips, and I'm on the golf, I'll see 50, 60, 100.
Right.
They're every place. I see turtles going.
I see more inside the bay here, in the more open areas, you know, where the boat traffic's not heavy, than I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, for some reason, the loggerheads are not being affected. Any of us need as much as like the green turtles and ridgelies, you know, from Texas and Mexico. You know, won't see many of them anymore, that's for sure.
A lot of you gentlemen here are fishermen out of Fort Myers, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
What's the main kind of fishing that goes on here? I know down in around Everglades City, I understand it's mostly rock crabbing that goes
stone,
on.
Stone crab.
So rock. I'm not from around here, you can tell.
Yeah, tell me.
So what do y'all do? What's the main kind of fishing that y'all do? Is it shrimping or?
Well, shrimping is probably the biggest money maker in this. And then, of course, you have your shrimping, you know, group of fishermen. And mullet's probably the biggest, isn't it?
In this area, mullet is usually your bread and butter.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the year-round part. But of course, we catch a lot of mackerel, pompano, other fish, migratory fish, you know, comes and goes, and catch bottom fish and trout. Not even redfish right now, but it's
can't catch them, but it's about the most I ever seen.
Well, they always have been. The problem is that it's hard to explain to people that fish are no different than any other type of wildlife. Traffic is what bothers them. If you turn all the traffic loose that's in Lee County waters and put it down in the Everglades, every one of them lions and bears and everything be jumping off the East Coast. They just won't stay around where there's a lot of traffic. And that's one of the problems that we're having with the fishers. This is just sheer traffic is one of the problems. And of course, we've got a lot of problems. You know, it's a very diversified industry. It's a very highly competitive industry. It's a real competitive industry. Even many of us who are involved in the same type of fishery, catching the same species, or do it different.
Did most of y'all learn the way that the fellow on the film said that you learned through an apprenticeship, or you learned by starting to go out on the boat?
I grew up in an apprentice.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's the way we all here learn. We grew up in an apprentice.
You know, Patty had mentioned the thing that the lifestyle. And that's what it is to us. It's a lifestyle. It's more than just fishing.
We're just born into it, you know.
It's a way of life.
So the fellow said that fishermen are a special breed. You agree with that?
Yeah. It's not a learned, in other words, it's not an industry that you can go and get a set of books and learn how to do it, like carpentry, plumbing, or anything like this. We learn by trial and error, hard work, experience, observation, and your computer, you remember all these things. You know, certain places, certain times, certain moons, certain tides, you see a fish, you know the characteristics of them, that they're going to do certain things on certain tides if they're in that particular area. So this is things that you just learn through experience over the years. And what the hindrance we have now with traffic, where we know that it's like it's a natural thing for mullet to go together on high water. They just like to go to get in bunches. They'll be scattered out, and they like to go together around high water. Well, the problem is that here they start working themselves to a point where they want to get together, and here comes along the boat. They're scattered, and they'll try it again, and they'll try that two or three times on that particular incoming tide, and they can't do it if another boat happens to come along and scatter them again. So you see a lot of scattered fish, but you don't see any fish that we would call it was enough of them there to mess with. We can go and see literally thousands of pounds of fish every day and come home without any fish in our boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not uncommon.
You can watch them all day long.
So,
enough to fill several boats. All still won't come home even smelling like one unless you got down from the day before. Okay.
The problem we're having, you know, with the regulations, and of course there's been more and more regulations because the philosophy is that there's a decline in the fishery. And the problem is that most people that are in the regulatory agencies that are making the decisions, they're either developers, they're cattlemen, they're lawyers, they're someone else who doesn't really have the inner knowledge of the industry or of what's going on. And they're not very receptive to the experience. They said, well, we can share our experiences with them, what we have observed all over the year, but they don't accept that as factual. Okay? And so this is one of the problems that we have. There are simple ways that I was talking to Max about regulatory things that they can use, and it's so simple that it's truly it's enforceable, and it would do everything that they want it to do as far as conservation and everything, but they're just not receptive to those simple things. You know, the thing that I see, like in that film, and as we're discussing here, a fisherman, hope is, you know, if you have a bad spring, the summer's going to be better. And so if summer's not no better, well, this fall we're going to have some fish, you know. And you live constantly under the realization that it's going to get better. And it always has. You know, we've done it all of our lives. And, you know, I've been fishing these Lee County waters since I was a kid. Raised it. And we've done it since we was able to get in a boat. And we've had good years and bad years, It's just a way of life that we're trying to maintain. That we're just not willing to just concede it and give it up. And that's what we're fighting for, because there is really not that, it's not the laid back industry that it used to be when we had, before we had such a tremendous influx of people in Florida, you know, where the laid back you went and came and you took off from your work and you was not concerned and you had closed seasons, but you know, it was just sort of an easy life, if you would, slow, easy life. But now it's become such a highly competitive thing with so much adverse things as far as the loss of habitat, water control, quality, as one of the gentlemen talked about, water quality. You know, the destruction of the estuarine systems, high technology. There's a lot of things. You know, we've gotten better equipment to do the same job that we done years ago. And so all of these things is pressure now. We're under more pressure than we used to be. But we're just fighting for a way of life.
How about dredging the river out? Is that the expectation? You mean the Broad Way Channel?